We're back in Deuteronomy chapter number 4. We're going to pick up in verse 32, where Moses is talking to the Israeli people that are just months away from going into the promised land. He knows he's not going to be with them, so he's cramming in as much review material as he can. The focal point of his talk right now is on the idea of idolatry, of making images to worship them, and how that will get the Israelis in trouble. They will end up losing their lives and their land, and then they will have to repent wherever they're at in foreign lands in order to come back into right relationship, which is a promise that God is a merciful God. God wants to redeem people out of their sin and back into right relationship. And so the Israeli people should remember to come back. Verse 32 of Deuteronomy 4. For ask now of the days that were past, which were before you, since the day that God created man on the earth, and ask from one end of the heaven to the other, whether such a great thing as this has ever happened or was ever heard of. Now, what he's wanting to talk about is the experience of Israel. So, you guys that are hearing me talk about this, I want you to think about history. I want you to review history. And then come to the understanding what you have is unique. Verse 34, or has any God ever attempted to go and take a nation, an ethnic group, for himself from the midst of another nation, another ethnic group, by trials, by signs, by wonders, and by war, by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and by great deeds of terror, all of which he who is your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? Now keep in mind, the oldest part of the Israeli people hearing Moses' review here are in their 50s. They were teenagers when the Exodus happened. There's a few in that next decade underneath them that were alive at the time, probably the ones that used to be 8, 9, 10. They also have some recollection of what it was like to be there during the first part of the Exodus 40 years ago. And so they can bear testimony that there has never been anything like what we experienced. Verse 35, to you it was shown that you might know that he who is God. There is no other besides him. Out of heaven, he let you hear his voice that he might discipline you. Now, that's the Mount Sinai giving of the Ten Commandments event that he's referring to. He's already brought that up. That's a really big deal to hear the voice of God, not seeing a form, hearing his voice, hearing the base commandment group, the Ten Commandments, which represents, in a nutshell, loving God with 100% of your being and loving your neighbor as yourself, loving humanity as you love yourself. That's the base of the Ten Commandments, and it becomes the base of all the other commandments the Jewish people have been given. So, verse 37, because he loved your fathers and chose their offspring after them, and brought you out of Egypt with his own presence by his great power, driving out before you nations greater and mightier than you to bring you in, to give you their land for an inheritance as it is this day. Now, remember, they have not yet gone into the technical promised land. The land promised specifically to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But they have already experienced God handing them bonus land on the east side of the Jordan River Valley because the Amorites under King Sihon and the Amorites under King Og attacked them, and God defended them, helped them in those battles, defeat all those people with God's supernatural assistance, chased them out of their towns, and took all those towns over. So that became an example of what's going to happen once they get into the Promised Land itself. So this bunch, all the way down into the teens that exist right now in the 40th year of the Exodus, they've all experienced that element of God to chase nations that are very powerful militarily, have a lot of people. They still got beat by the Israelis with God's assistance, and the Israelis inherited that property. So they know firsthand about that. Verse 39, because you know all that, Moses says, know therefore today, lay it in your heart. And I haven't mentioned this recently, so let me make the emphasis again. For the Israeli mindset, the Jewish mindset, heart is not about emotion. That's a Western perspective. The heart is where you make choices. It's equivalent to what we mean when we say mind. In fact, that's the reason why when Jesus restates the greatest commandment, even though in the Old Testament it says, love he who is your God with all your heart, soul, and strength, that's what's in the text here in Moses' writings. Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Because mind is helping any Gentiles that might be reading this material, Westerners, to understand heart and mind are the same between those two cultures. Okay, so back to the text. Verse 39, know therefore today, lay it in your heart, that he who is your God is in heaven above and on the earth beneath. There is no other. Therefore you shall keep his statutes and his commandments, which I command you today, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, and that you may prolong your days in the land that he who is your God is giving you for all time. So into perpetuity, basically until you get yourself in trouble and get kicked out. The law for the Israelis is to help them avoid judgment. In the New Testament, Paul points out that the law is not for those that do things the right way. The law is actually for those that have to be forced to do the right thing. They won't behave themselves. Sometimes, even if there is a law, they won't behave themselves. But here, the way to avoid getting executed, the way to avoid getting sick, coming under God's judgment in some form or fashion, for the Israelis, the way to avoid those negative things is to follow God's directives, and you'll live long in the land. At this point, we're going to start seeing the review elements of what Moses has received during the first part of the Exodus and then kind of the fine-tuning of it over the last 39 years or so. Verse 41, then Moses set apart three cities on the east beyond the Jordan, that the manslayer might flee there, and anyone who kills his neighbor unintentionally, without being at enmity with him in time past, he may flee to one of these cities and save his life. This should be fresh in our minds because we dealt with this not too many sessions ago. The annexed territory on the east side of the Jordan Valley, the former kingdom of Sihon the Amorite and Og the Amorite. That's all Israeli territory now. It needs to have three cities of refuge. These are appeals court cities, effectively, where if a person kills someone but feels that they're extenuating circumstances, like they did it accidentally, or there were other fine points that need to be dealt with, they can run off to one of these cities and get a change of venue trial to make sure that they get a fair trial. And so every city needs to be, every one of these three cities on the east side of the Jordan has to be within an easy one day's travel for every Israeli living in that region. And so here are the three cities that are mentioned. Bezer, in the wilderness on the tableland for the Reubenites. Now that would be in the south, east of the north bay of the Dead Sea, somewhere in that area. We don't know exactly where Bezer is. Ramoth in Gilead for the Gadites. So we know where Ramoth Gilead is, and it is east of the Jordan Valley, again, within an easy day's walk from the middle section of the eastern annexed territories. And then that leaves Golan in Bashan for the Manassites, those that belong to the tribe of Manasseh. We don't know exactly where the city of Golan is. We know Bashan is east and to the northeast of the Sea of Galilee. In fact, we call that whole region not Bashan now, we call it Golan, as in the Golan Heights. And it's been known by that name ever since New Testament Bible times. It used to be called Golanitis. So a city somewhere in that same general vicinity, east of the Sea of Galilee, would have been an easy day's walk from anywhere in the tribe of Manasseh on the east side of the Jordan Valley. Verse 44, this is the law that Moses set before the people of Israel. It's interesting. We know that the book of Deuteronomy is a transcription of everything that Moses spoke to them in the 11th month of the 40th year of the Exodus on the east side of the Jordan across from Jericho, and that Moses made sure that it was all written down for future generations. But every once in a while, we run across little sections that seem to be from a different hand. It's still inspired. It's probably a prophet that is later adding some clarification material, historical material. And this seems to be one of those places because it's not written from a first-person perspective by Moses. Verse 44, this is the law that Moses set before the people of Israel. These are the testimonies, the statutes, and the rules which Moses spoke to the people of Israel when they came out of Egypt, beyond the Jordan, in the valley opposite Beth Peor, in the land of Sihon, the king of the Amorites who lived at Heshbon, whom Moses and the people of Israel defeated when they came out of Egypt. So you can kind of see this is a historical note, a commentary. They took possession of his land and the land of Og, the king of Bashan, the two kings of the Amorites who lived in the east or to the east beyond the Jordan, from Aroer, let's try that again, Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon. That's a drainage wadi that's at the midpoint of the north bay of the Dead Sea. As far as Mount Sirion, that is Hermon. So that's up to the northeast of the Sea of Galilee. Mount Hermon is the highest mountain in the upper area of the Promised Land, together with all the Arabah on the east side of the Jordan, as far as the Sea of the Arabah, that's the name for the Dead Sea, under the slopes of Pisgah. Pisgah, of course, is the little mountain range on the northeast corner of the Dead Sea, and the plains of Moab are immediately under them to the east, down in the flatland of the Jordan River. Chapter 5. Moses summoned all Israel and said to them. So now we're back to the first person address. Hear, O Israel. And little quick note here. The word hear in Hebrew, shema, is the imperative form of hear. And it carries with it the weight of obey. And we see this mentioned kind of in the New Testament concept of he who has ears to hear, let him hear. So don't just simply be a hearer of the word, but a doer of it. You have to obey. Hear and obey. Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the rules that I speak in your hearing today, and you shall learn them and be careful to do them. He who is our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. So we're back to the Ten Commandments again. Not with our fathers did he who is make this covenant, but with us, who are all of us here alive today. And it's probably the sense of not just with our fathers did he who is make this covenant, but with us, who are all of us here alive today. Because remember, we've got that group that were teenagers and those that were in the next decade under the teenagers way back when the Ten Commandments were offered. Everybody else is dead except for Moses, Caleb, and Joshua. But here's this bunch that are in their 50s and 40s that heard this stuff. And Moses keeps emphasizing that they are eyewitnesses, ear witnesses of this stuff. He who is spoke with you face to face at the mountain out of the midst of the fire, while I stood between he who is and you at that time to declare to you the word of he who is. For you were afraid because of the fire, and you did not go up into the mountain. He said, let's hold off on what God said just for a moment. Remember that everything was set up with the people being behind the barricades, behind the line at the foot of the mountain. Moses went up and talked to God and then told the people, okay, listen up, God's going to talk. After the delivery of the 10 words, the 10 sayings, the 10 commandments, that's when the people are like, no, you need to go back up there, Moses, and tell him to quit talking to us. We're too scared. You go find out what he wants us to know and come back down and tell us and we'll do it. Now, they didn't follow through with that promise. But that is one of the elements of Moses' intercessory responsibilities from the Ten Commandments event onward. So God said, so now we have a summary of the Ten Commandments. I am he who is your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me, or beside me, or alongside me, or with me. Meaning, I'm the only one. You shouldn't be talking about other gods and goddesses. Now, of course, the gods and the goddesses are probably fallen angels that are god and goddess wannabes and causing all sorts of trouble by pretending that they are more than what they really are, which is just a created being that rebelled against God. So the rule is only one God, the Creator. Rule number 2, verse 8. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or a likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, or that's on the earth beneath, or that's in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I am he who is your God, and I am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and the fourth generation of those who hate me. So don't make images is rule number two. Images for worship, artwork is something different here. We talked about that already in a previous commentary about this. But I want to remind you not to over-apply the comments here about visiting the iniquity on the of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me. First of all, the hating is, it's a lack of commitment. Love is commitment, hate is non-commitment. So it's the troublemakers. And the visiting the iniquity part is consequences, not guilt transfer. God does not punish kids for the sins of their parents. That is wrong. And in the law, God says to the judges, you will not put someone to death for the sin of their father. But consequences do reverberate into other generations. Think about a person who gets themselves in trouble for murdering someone. Well, that person's going to be executed. Well, that's going to impact negatively on their kids and even on their grandkids. Even somebody that ends up doing things that gets them turned into a slave, that's going to impact negatively on the next generations. And so that's what God is talking about here, is I let the consequences reverberate through additional generations because consequences come from sinful actions, and there needs to be a lesson here. Verse 10, but showing steadfast love, that's the Hebrew word chesed. You can spell it H-E-S-E-D, but it's got that hard H sound at the front of it, chesed. It's the word that, for all practical purposes, it means God likes us. God wants what's best for us. And so God shows that sort of loving kindness, as you see it in some translations, to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. That's what God prefers. He'd rather not have to judge. He'd rather be involved in a blessing relationship with people. By the time we get to the end of the book here, the end of the address, Moses will be talking about it being an either-or situation. Either you maintain a good relationship with God and you're blessed, or you go against God and you end up being cursed. And so that's kind of what we're seeing here. As either you get yourself in trouble with God and cause consequences to your kids and grandkids, or you come under God's mercy and love and compassion. You get blessed because you're doing things God's way. Verse number 11, rule number 3 for the Israelites, you shall not take the name of he who is your God in vain, for he who is will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. That is, you don't use God as a manipulation, as a means of taking advantage of other people. I swear in the name of he who is, I'll pay you $50 next week if you'll just loan me $40 today, when you have no intention of doing that. You're just trying to take advantage of the guy. That is wrong, to use God's name, he who is, which Yahweh is the close approximation of the Hebrew. It means he who is. You don't use God to manipulate the situation or other people. This is one of the things that still kind of irritates me. More than once, I have been the target, and I've seen it a lot in circumstances and situations as a spectator, where people will try to say, well, God told me this, or God told me that, or God says you need to do this, or God told me that you need to do that. And they're just using the name of God to manipulate other people. That is using God's name in vain. So is swearing falsely in his name, which is why in the New Testament, Jesus and his half-brother James says, you don't swear in God's name. You let your yes mean yes and your no mean no. Generally speaking, I think the best way to express this, the core of the idea behind this commandment is, if you aren't talking about God appropriately or talking to God, then his name ought to be not be on your lips. So he shouldn't be used as a curse word either. Verse number 12. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Sabbath means seven and rest. The Israeli people had been slaves for many generations in Egypt, never had any holidays, no time off. And so God put a mandatory, cross-the-board day of rest for them. And that's very uniquely Jewish. So observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as he who is your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to he who is your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock or the sojourner who's within your gates, that your male servant, your female servant may rest as well as you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and he who is your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, he who is your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So God said, you all need some time off every week. Use the Sabbath day for that. Now, the principle comes into our New Testament period, I think, intact. But it doesn't require that we keep the Jewish Sabbath.